Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's begin. We're going to begin today the Midbar, the desert. So we're going to spend, Emir Tzashem, probably two classes on the Midbar. So let's first read Parak Shir. Number one, Midbar Omer, the Midbar says, actually, interestingly enough, you're going to see, so the Midbar says, Yesusum Midbar v'tzia v'sagela arava v'sifrach kachavatselas. The desert says, the wilderness and the desert shall rejoice. Because remember again, there are two words that are used over here. Midbar and Tzia. So the wilderness, thank you. The wilderness and the desert shall rejoice. And the arid region shall exult and blossom like the rose. So already, again, what's interesting about this particular thing, again, just interesting to note, is that here you have a pasuk that is from Yeshayo, as opposed to most of Parak Shira, which are pesukim from where, as we've seen. I mean, not that we've seen so much, but so far what we've seen is from where? Tehillim and Mishlei. That's where a lot of things come from. But here you have a pasuk from Yeshayo. So let's analyze this a little bit. So, So let's begin by understanding a little bit of what the message of the Midbar is. So we're going to do a couple of different approaches. Take a look at the Radak. So the Radak in number 2 says as follows. Yesh lefarish, Midbar b'tzia, Eretz Yisrael. So the Radak understands over here, since this is Yeshayo, so remember again, much of Yeshayo contains metaphoric messages for the future of Klal Yisrael. So the Radak understands what is it referred to when it says that the wilderness and the desert shall rejoice. Yesusum, which means to rejoice. Midbar v'tzia. What's the desert and the wilderness? The Radak understands. Midbar v'tzia Eretz Yisrael. The Midbar v'tzia, the wilderness, and the desert refers to Eretz Yisrael. Shehaisa kemidbar meyom shagalu Yisrael mimenu. Himena, ata b'chorban eretz, gusi sosis v'sagil, kisha techrav zos, tisyashev zos. So the Radak understands the pasuk to be a study in contrasts. The first part of the pasuk, yismach, midbar v'tzia, v'sagel arava, k'v'sifrach k'chavatzeles. He says, ultimately, again, as a reference to, Midbar B'tzia is a reference to Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael, when was Eretz Yisrael Midbar? When was it a desert? So the Radak says, when Klal Yisrael and the Mishnah Mikdash was destroyed, Klal Yisrael ultimately, again, was exiled. And when Eretz Yisrael is in a state of destruction and disrepair, the nations of the world go ahead and rejoice. So the Radak actually reads this pasuk in a very interesting way. See, we assume that what it meant was Yesusum Midbar Vitzia, that it is the desert and the wilderness that are rejoicing. Visagel Arava Visifra Kachavatzelis. The arid region shall exalt, blossom like a rose. So the Radak reads it like this. He says Yesusum, they will rejoice. Who is the they? Who is the they? The nations will. The Umos HaOlam. Right? The nations will rejoice when? Midbar Vitzia. When Eretz Yisrael is a desolate desert. When Eretz Yisrael has been vanquished, Eretz Yisrael has been conquered, and ultimately, again, it's a wasteland, the nations of the world will rejoice. Now, interestingly enough, the end of the pasuk says, Visagel Arava, Visifrach Kachavat, bless you, Visifrach Kachavat Zelis. The end of the pasuk says, that's what? That at the end of the day, although the nations go ahead and exult and rejoice because Eretz Yisrael is a wasteland, the day will come when Eretz Yisrael will come back to life. So that which looks like an arid desert now will one day come back to life and ultimately again blossom like the rose. In fact, the Gemara in number 3 says something amazing. The Gemara says, quoting this dynamic, because where does the Radak, the Radak understands this idea, that last phrase in number 2, Kishatichrav zos tisyashev zos. How would you translate that phrase? Kishatichrav zos tisyashev zos. When one is what? When one is destroyed, the other is?
Settled.
Right? Which sounds like, the way this works is, it's almost like a seesaw effect between Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, and the rest of the world, right? When Eretz Yisrael is settled and good, so the other nations are not. When the other nations are good, Eretz Yisrael is not. So where does the Radak get this? From Zachi Gemara. If you take a look at number 3, the Gemara Maseches Megillah says something amazing. Kesari v'Yerushalayim. Right? So Kesaria and Yerushalayim. So remember again, this is not necessarily a reference to Kesaria in Eretz Yisrael, right? This is a reference ultimately again to Rome. Caesarea is a reference to Rome. Remember again, where does Caesarea get its name from? right, to Caesar, right? It was a city that was named by, I don't know which one of the Roman procurators, which one of the Roman governments, in honor of the Caesar. So ultimately, again, if someone tells you, Yushalayim Kesari, Im Yomer Lecha Adam, Charvu Shteyan, if someone tells you that, what? They've both been destroyed, Al-Tamin. Al-Tamin means what? Don't believe them. Yashvu Shteyan, both are totally fine and settled, Al-Tamin. Do not believe this. Charva Kesari V'yash Yushalayim, if someone tells you, Kesari, Rome was destroyed, and Yerushalayim is settled, or Charva Yerushalayim V'yashva Kesari, or Yerushalayim has been destroyed, and Rome is settled, Tamin. Ultimately, again, you should believe it. What is the Gemara saying? What's the message of the Gemara? Excellent. The relationship between Rome and Caesar is also the relationship between who? Esav and Yaakov. How are we first introduced to the relationship between Esav and Yaakov? The first description of their relationship. In the womb. What was happening in the womb? Vayisrotzitzu habanim bikirba. Remember, again, you know, this is actually an interesting idea. The Pasuk says that the children struggled inside of her. So remember again, what does Rivka Imenu say? You remember the end of that Pasuk? Vatomer imkein, lama ze anochi. By the way, what is that? Just as an aside, what does it mean, lama ze anochi? What was Rivka saying, lama ze anochi?
Why is she having a hard pregnancy?
So why is she having a hard pregnancy? Good. What else? That's not, what's Pshuto Shel Mikra?
Why am I going to do it if it's so painful?
Why am I going to, Pshuto Shel Mikra, what is she saying?
Why
do I need this for, right? Rashi, right? The way Rashi interprets the Pasuk is that Rivka is saying, this is what I daven for. Right, this is what I asked for. Imkein lama za'anochi. If this is what pregnancy is, no, thank you. That's how intense the pain was. Rivka, you know, the Medrash relates that Rivka spoke to some of her friends. I don't know that Rivka had friends, but the Medrash says chaveros, right? Some of her friends who went through pregnancy, and she asked them, "Did you go through this? Did you go through this?" And everybody looked at her like, "No, we don't know what you're describing." I guess she was describing pain that was so. She literally, again, does not understand what's happening inside of her. But we know what's happening inside of her. There is the fundamental struggle that has taken over the world from the time she gave birth to those boys until this very day. It's the struggle between Yaakov and Esav. And the nature of that struggle is, this is reflected in Birchas Yaakov, which is in the brachos that Yaakov received from Yitzchak, the nature of the struggle is, Ulaom mil'om ye'ematz. There's only one person on the top. There's only one person on the top. Never could it be that life is good both for Rome and for Yerushalayim. There is always a struggle. And because there's a struggle, there always has to be one who is dominant and one who is subservient. That's the Gemara saying. If someone tells you that Yerushalayim and Rome are both settled or both destroyed, don't believe them. That's not the way the world works. Someone's on top and someone's on bottom. Sometimes it's Yerushalayim, sometimes it's Rome, but the struggle is always there, quite incredibly dramatic. So according to the Radak, what the Midbar is telling us is what? What's the message of the Midbar?
This is how your life is
going to
play out.
So this is what's how your life is going to play out?
That whenever you're on top.
Hey, so first of all, understand, you can understand this concept, by the way, also as a national piece, but also it's a metaphor for personal life. You know, everyone in life wants things to go their way. And everyone wants life to be smooth. If there's one thing you could bank on, you could absolutely expect it's going to be what? Life is going to throw you many, many curveballs. And there are things that are not going to go well, and there are things that are going to go terribly. I don't mean like this to be a downer, but this is just the reality, right? That's how life works. That's how life works. So anyone who tells you that you're always up here and you're always going to be up here, then at the end of the day, they're giving you misinformation. Life is filled with peaks and valleys. Sometimes you succeed, sometimes you fail. On a national level, it's always important to understand we're always fighting against Esav, right? We always fight against Esav. Think about this for just a moment. We live, especially again, and this is true whether you live in Eretz or whether you live here, because even Eretz Yisrael before Mashiach comes is still subject to so many different influences. We're bombarded by Esav influences. Now, not all of them are bad. There are some things that Esav has in society that are very good, that are very productive, that are very helpful for us as a people as well. But there are many influences in greater society that run counter to our ideology, counter to our hashkafas, and counter to our values. We're always doing battle with Esav. Sometimes it's physical battle, but more often than not, it's spiritual, emotional, theological battle. And that battle plays out each and every day. And one thing is clear. At the end of the battle, what happens? What happens?
Someone wins.
Someone wins and someone loses. So every single day I ask myself a simple question. Did I win the battle against Esav or did I lose it? That's the question. Now the truth is usually it's not that simple. Usually I've won some battles and lost other battles. But says the Midbar does. Midbar Omer, the Midbar says, Yesusum, they rejoice. When does Edom, when does Rome rejoice? Midbar Vitzia, when Eretz Yisrael is a desolate desert. But even when Eretz Yisrael is a desolate desert, just know that the ability to regenerate, the ability to return, the ability to come back is always there. So according to this first approach, the Midbar teaches us this idea. Life is a struggle. The struggle against Edom is something that is real. It's something that we must deal with each and every day, sometimes on a national level, sometimes on a personal level, but something we're always aware of. That's the Radak. If you take a look at number four, so a second approach is, we're going to go on a little bit of a detour here. And this is, I'm going to share with you one of my favorite pieces from the Eish Kodesh. So the Pasuk says as follows. I think we've mentioned this even before in passing. The Pasuk says, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha, b'chol levavcha, u'b'chol nafshecha, u'b'chol ma'odecha. Right, you shall love Hashem your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all of your might. Now, if I were to ask you, what's the great challenge with this Pasuk, what would you say? You have to love Hashem. What's the problem? What's the problem? Sorry? You can't legislate emotion. You could legislate behaviors. So you could tell me I have to keep Shabbos. That's a behavior. You could tell me I have to eat kosher. That's a behavior. You could tell me not to wear shatnez. That's a behavior. You could give me a whole system of behavior. You could tell me that I have to give charity. That's a behavior. You could tell me a whole bunch of things that are behaviors. You can't legislate emotions. So how is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling me that I have to love Him? It's a very strange mitzvah. So Rashi already picks up on this. And Rashi says, well, first of all, what's the first pshat of Rashi? Remember again, Rashi gives a very nuanced interpretation. I didn't put it on the sheet. Anyone remember what Rashi says on this pasuk? V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha. Rashi says, Asei Devarav Me'ahava. What does it mean? Asei Devarav Me'ahava? Do the actions like you love Him. What is Rashi teaching us?
Fake it till you make it.
Right? Fake it till you make it. Right? That sometimes you don't feel love towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes you don't. But the easiest way to cultivate that love is how? By going ahead and acting towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that behaviorally shows like you love Him. You may not feel it on the inside. You know, the example I often give with this is, you know, it might be my job to go ahead and take out the garbage at home. So when I take out the garbage, I have two ways. No one likes taking out the garbage, right? No normal person like says, wow, I can't wait till the garbage is full, I can take it out. Right? But when you take out the garbage, you have two choices. You can take it out with a sullen expression because it's raining, it's snowing, it's 95 degrees, you don't want to go outside. Or you could paste a smile on your face. Now, are you genuinely happy about the avod of taking out the garbage? Chances are, no. But something amazing happens, which is when you act in a certain way, over time, you begin to feel that very way. So Rashi says, V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha is not an emotional obligation. In fact, it is a behavioral obligation. V'yahavtas Hashem Elokecha doesn't teach you how to feel, it teaches you how to act. And how should you act? Act, do the mitzvahs, that it looks like you love what you're doing. It's an incredible idea. Fake it. Make it look like you love what you're doing. I don't. I don't really feel that way. I don't really love it. I don't really enjoy it. That's okay. Just pretend. Act in a way that makes it look like you love it. And what'll happen? Over time, you will genuinely come to love it. An incredible idea in our Avodas Hashem in general. This is very important because also, what is Rashi doing for us? Rashi is giving us such an incredible sense of validation. What's the validation he's giving us?
It's okay if you don't love me. it's okay if you don't want to do it. Meaning that sometimes we have this expectation, unrealistic expectation, that like the natural default is that of course I'm going to love to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't wait to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Give me more because more mitzvos. So for some people are like that, but a lot of us are not like that. A lot of us would be like, I'd rather be doing something else, right? Or I'd rather be taking care of my own needs, or I'd rather be focusing more on me than focusing on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Rashi says, that's okay. That's okay. Each of us are wired in different ways, and some of us do not have a natural predisposition to want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But just because that's not your predisposition or your proclivity does not exempt you from it. So what's your avoda? Your avoda is do it in a way that looks like you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the guarantee is over time, you will come to feel that love. You may not feel it initially, you may not feel it in the beginning, but keep up with it and the love will come, which in general is also just an incredible idea about how you engender feelings. People often think that feelings are a result of how you feel. I know that sounds a little bit strange, right? That feelings come as a result. Feelings are informed by actions. How you feel is often a direct result of what you do. That's why, again, if I do something that is not appropriate or I do something that is bad, even if it gave me some basic level of pleasure, no one ever feels good about themselves in the aftermath of negative behaviors. You just don't. I might enjoy it. I might even do it again. But at the end of the day, I don't feel good about it. The feeling that it engenders is not a good one. It's behaviors shape feelings. This is an incredibly important idea. That's why, again, even on a Yiddishkeit level, a person is struggling with inspiration. What's the antidote for struggling with inspiration? I'm not inspired. Don't feel inspired. I feel like religiously or spiritually, I have flatlined. What's the answer to that? How do you deal with that? Right? So incredibly, it's the most counterintuitive etzah you could ever give someone. I have conversations like this with people very often who just don't feel connected to inspired. And what they're looking for is like a machshava. Right? They're looking for like, tell me, give me an outlook or give me an insight. And really the answer is, do something. Do a mitzvah. Do a chesed. Learn a little bit of Torah. The only way to change how you feel is through dynamic activity. That is the great anomaly of inspiration. Inspiration doesn't come because of a different way you think, or a different way you cogitate, or a different way you look at the world, or you look at yourself. Inspiration comes as a direct result of dynamic activity. The more you do, the more inspired you feel. But then Rashi goes on. And in number 5, Rashi quotes another interpretation. B'chalabavcha, Rashi says, B'shnei yitzrecha. So here, the pasuk is really focusing, Rashi's been focusing on what does it mean with all of your heart. So Rashi says, B'shnei yitzrecha. What does B'shnei yitzrecha mean? With what? Yitzrecha yitzetov. So, sorry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with my yitzrecha tov, I understand. How do you serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with your yitzhara? How?
Conquer.
So one answer could be conquer it. What's the problem with saying conquer it?
Not conquer, but fight it.
Fight it, okay, engage in the battle. Good. What else? What's the challenge with that? I mean, absolutely true. What's the challenge with the battle?
You're not using it for...
So right, so battling it is like the image we have often is like pushing back against it. There's a higher level, which is a rechanneling, yes. Oh, so this is a very important yisod. You know, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Abedichev writes about this idea. It quotes the Zohar, and it's such a beautiful image. He says, every day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends down shefa, sends down energy into us. And the nature of that energy is fundamentally dependent on what you're doing at the moment you receive that energy. He says, if a person is engaged in a maisa avera, something not good, so that energy will propel them down that derech. If, however, you receive the energy in a moment that you're engaged in good, then ultimately the energy will propel you down that derech. What's the problem? Or what's the challenge? You don't know when the shefa is coming. So if you don't know when the shefa is coming, the Rebbe highlights it to be in a constant state of preparedness. But what it does is it frames things in a very... There is no such thing as something, even the notion of a yetzer hara, there's no such thing as something negative inside of you that needs to be eradicated. Every when I do something wrong, if I commit an avera, you fill in the blank with your favorite avera, right? But if I commit an avera, so it's not the pshat that there's something inside of me that needs to be eradicated. There's something inside of me that needs to be rechanneled. A person commits an avera because they have misused internal energy. There's koach that I possess. There's koach that I possess. The great challenge of life is, where do you channel that koach? When a person commits an avera, then at the end of the day, what are they doing? I'll give you a mashal. So if you have a field and you have to irrigate your field, right? So you ever see how they irrigate fields? Right? So you have like an irrigation pond. So what do? You go ahead and you make a channel from the irrigation pond to your field. And that's how the water flows into your field. So the Yetzirah, so when you use your energies in the right way, so you're taking the water from the irrigation pond, which represents the pool of your kochos, you're channeling it towards your field, which represents dynamic, proper activity, and you're going to make something grow. What happens when a person commits an Avera? What they do is they make another channel off that primary channel. So I have the irrigation pond, their primary channel. Now someone digs another side channel. What happens when you dig another side channel? What does it do? It diverts the water. It diverts the water to a place where it's not going to accomplish anything. What Avedas do is they divert the energy towards the wrong way. The energy is good. Think about this for a second. When a person commits an Avera, Averas require koach. Different Averas require different forms of koach. But at the end of the day, there's a koach that's being used. My goal is not to obliterate the koach. My goal is to rechannel. To rechannel that koach into something proper, into something good. This is incredibly important because people often think that the avoda in life is to eradicate chet, to eradicate averas, to eradicate ra, to eradicate the yetzahara. First of all, it's not going to happen. No one ever eradicates yetzahara. It always remains. It just pops up in different ways. The goal is, don't siphon off your energy in ways that don't yield peros. Make sure that you rechannel your kochos in a way that ultimately, again, has the greatest. So what's tshuva? What's tshuva? This is very important. What is the process of tshuva? What's tshuva? Rechanneling your energies. This is very important. Tshuva, we think tshuva is ashamnu, baganu, gazanu. That's the first part of tshuva. Because I can't rechannel if I don't first acknowledge how I've siphoned off koach to do negative things. But real tshuva is... ultimately, when I take that koach that I siphoned off in negative ways and I rechannel it back to something positive. This is why Chazal say, "Makom sheba le'tshuva omdim tzadikim gimurim eno yachol amod." That's not like just like a nice thing that Chazal said to make a baal tshuva feel good. There's a koach that a baal tshuva has that no one else understands. Because what a baal tshuva has done is a baal tshuva has lived a life where I've allowed my kochos to be dispersed in multiple directions, many of which are not good. And now I have made an active decision to channel my kochos into something that is good. That is a Herculean decision. That's why the Gemara says, when a person does tshuva mi'ava, what happens to their averos? Whoever heard of such a thing like this, right? It goes ahead and it defies comprehension. You want to tell me that if I do tshuva, my zedonos nas islo kishkagos. Okay, I hear that. My intentional averos can be relegated to the state ultimately of inadvertent averos. But that when I do tshuva me'ava, somehow again, my averos nas islo kizechuyos, and by this another girsa, nas islo kimitzvos. Can you imagine that? Through tshuva, my averos have the ability to go ahead and become mitzvos. What's the pshat with that? You must tell us, what does that mean? What are the mechanics of that? How does that work? The simple answer is, we don't understand tshuva. Tshuva is a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the way God says it works, so just accept it and smile and say thank you. But if you want to understand the mechanics, so the Maharal in the Sivat Tshuva says, I'll tell you how it works. When a person grows from their averos, when a person realizes, okay, I committed averos A, B, C, D, and E, right? Halavai, that's all, right? Just A through E. And I realize that those averos were fueled by kochos that I have. Those averos show me the kochos that I possess. If as a result of committing those averos, I recognize now the incredible amount of koach that I have,
and I rechannel that koach to do something good, then it turns out, listen to these words, says the Maharal, that my averos were the very catalysts for my growth. The averos showed me something about myself that I would not have known without the averos, and because of that, my failures, my averos, become the very springboard for growth. When your averos become the springboard for growth, averos naases lo kizachuyos. Your averos mamish become like mitzvos. Now, this doesn't mean go out and commit mitzvos, but what it does is, after the fact, if I grow, recognize the kochos that I have that I never knew before, rechannel those kochos into something positive, suddenly even the most negative and horrendous and horrific act could literally be transformed into a mitzvah, into a zchus. Yes?
Just a question on the chazal, the makish, Baal Tshuva. So it seems like, if you say a Baal Tshuva is not anyone who is literally a Baal Tshuva, someone who just flexes their best Tshuva, but then it makes it seem like there could be a tzaddik gomer without being a Baal Tshuva.
Right, so there are actually like conflicting ma'amari chazal. So for example, the Maharsha comments on that Gemara. You know, the Maharsha is bothered by that Gemara. He says, what does that mean? Are chazal literally saying that someone who's a Baal Tshuva is greater than someone? I mean, who's the tzaddik gomer? Right, the tzaddik gomer is someone who also has yitzhara, but he's resisted it, or she's resisted it all of that time. So really, that person is less. So the Maharsha understands. He understands the Lashon of b'makom shebali tshuva omdim ein tzaddik gomerim, that there are different stations in life. And the tzaddik gomer can never understand the place where the Baal Tshuva lives. Lav dafka, not necessarily that the Baal Tshuva is actively greater than the tzaddik, right? Life is not about me being greater than you, you being greater than me. You have your tachlis, I have my tachlis, my... But it's saying that the tzaddik can't comprehend where the Baal Tshuva is.
Shouldn't a tzaddik be a Baal Tshuva? That's just my question.
No, so the Gemara is understanding Baal Tshuva in this context is referring to someone who has lived a different kind of life. That's how they're understanding Baal Tshuva, right? Every person is a Baal Tshuva, or at least every person ideally should be a Baal Tshuva. When Chazal used that Lashon over, they're referring to someone who, for some dramatic part of their life, was doing something that they should not be doing. Such a person, right? Such a person who underwent... and by the way, you see this, right? If you, the truth is, if a person was brought up in a from household, and you encounter people who made active decisions in life, it's sometimes hard to understand why people make those active decisions. If you're brought up with something, you're used to it. So we'd like to think that if given the choice, I would still choose my lifestyle, but the truth is I don't have that choice. I was brought up in a certain way. This is what I've had. When you see people who had a different life and actively choose a life of Avodas Hashem, a life of Torah, a life of mitzvos, it's very overwhelming. When a person can exercise that level of bechira to actively choose a more constrict life. Because remember again, when there was things about a Baal Tshuva doesn't have to mean someone who is committing horrible averos. Baal Tshuva is just someone who wasn't living a Torah life, for whatever the reason, either because they didn't know, whatever it is. When you see someone make that conscious decision, it's incredible. It's absolutely, it's overwhelming. I often, when I run into people like this, I often ask myself, like, if I was born into their shoes, would I have the courage to make those same decisions?
That's the lesson from it? The lesson is not that we should do teshuva. It doesn't have a lesson with teshuva at all.
What has a lesson on teshuva?
That chazal. Someone brings up that chazal during Elul, it's not inspiring.
Well, it is inspiring because none of us are tzaddikim gemurim.
But we're not
about
teshuva.
Well, we should be about, of course we should be about teshuva. I'm saying, no, why?
Because the Baal Tshuva is someone who grew up not...
No, that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm sorry, I was just giving an example. I was just giving an example of how we colloquially use that statement about Baal Tshuva. No, let me clarify. When Chazal used that Lashon, thank you for catching me on this. When Chazal used that Lashon of Baal Tshuva, they're not necessarily referring to it as how we colloquially use it, as someone who grew up not from... When they're using Baal Tshuva, they're meaning someone who has committed a good number of averus. So I think for most, I won't speak for anyone, for me, that speaks to me a lot during Chodesh Elul. Right? But lav dafka, someone had different, we use that term, today we use that term very differently than the way Chazal used it. So it has application for all of us, even during Chodesh Elul. So okay, so here comes along Rashi, and Rashi says, Shelo ye libcha chalok ala makam. So Rashi says that ultimately, I'm sorry, so before we get to that, b'shtei yitzrecha, right? Use your Yetzer HaTov, use your Yetzer HaRa to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you do that? By recognizing, and this is very important, nothing inside of you is bad.
This is so incredibly important, because sometimes we erroneously think that when we do bad things, that means that there's something bad inside of me that needs to be stamped out. There is nothing inside of me that's bad. The only thing that sometimes occurs is that I allow my koach to be hijacked and used in a negative way. But I don't have to stamp out anything. I just have to rechannel my kohos. But then Rashi says, and with this, this will be the springboard for the next part of the discussion. Dover acher b'chal levavcha. Rashi as well says, mean b'chal levavcha. Shelo yihye lipcha chalok ala makom. How do you translate that phrase? Shelo yihye lipcha chalok ala makom. Your heart shouldn't be divided. Lefnei makom. What's makom? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does mean your heart shouldn't be divided? What does that mean? Don't be a hypocrite. Good meaning what? So it could be a continuation, right? That ultimately, again, use all of your energy in your Avodas Hashem. That's excellent. The only problem with that is, Rashi phrases this as a Davar Acher. So when he says Davar Acher, usually he's espousing another separate, distinct approach. So what could it mean?
Maybe I always thought it meant that he's saying, don't let all your passion be divided. All your passion, all that you care about should be serving Hashem, and there shouldn't be other things in life that are as important to you.
Oh, beautiful. Maybe it's creating a hierarchy. Good, meaning your avodas Hashem should be the most important thing and nothing else should rival that. Excellent. Good. What else? So there's a simple, very smart group of young women. There's a simpler pshat. The simple pasha understanding of Rashi is, don't be a fair weather Jew. Meaning what? Everybody loves HaKadosh Baruch Hu when things are good, right? When life is going according to plan, when I have what I want, I get the brachas that I want, my tilas are answered. Everyone is the biggest fan of the Almighty. But then the moment that something does not go right, quote unquote, or something does not go according to plan, or something I wanted or davened for does not materialize in the way that I wanted it, suddenly everyone has theological tightness on the Ribbono Shel Olam. Suddenly again, we're perplexed theologically. Where is God? Keli, keli, lama azavtani. What happened over here? Where are you? Why have you forsaken me? So Rashi HaKadosh says, v'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, with all of your heart means, shlo yilivcha chalak ala makom. In times of good and in times of challenge, love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't be a fair weather friend to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but rather whatever is happening in your life, good or challenge, make sure you find a way to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam in a meaningful and solid fashion. Yes?
Why doesn't it go to singular?
Where?
Let's say use both parts of your heart for Hashem. Don't divide both parts of your heart. It says,
well, that's interesting. I don't know. That's a good question. I'll see with the Mefarshim. Excellent. I'll see with the Mefarshim Rashi. I didn't notice that before. But that's an excellent ta'ara. I'm not sure why he shifts like that. Okay. Good. Now you give me homework. So Rashi says, meaning, love HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all parts of your heart. All parts of your heart. Meaning, in times of good and in times of challenge, make sure that you have a solid and connected and committed relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're going to stop here for today. But on Monday, we're going to pick up with the Piyajetzna, a beautiful piece by the Ish Kodesh that ultimately ties into this Rashi. And then Emir Tashem will tie it back to the Midbar and Perek Shira.